the Dublin Podcast Festival returns for its third year in November. Tickets have just gone on sale. And in front of me, I have two very committed podcast fans, Alan Swan and Nadine O'Regan. And they've been taking a look at their personal favourites in the world of art and culture podcasts. Before we get into some of your choices, one of the most appealing aspects of podcasting is the specialist nature of the discipline. Nadine, how well served are arts and culture in the whole area of podcasts?
In some respects, exceptionally well served, because there are just so many podcasts out there. There are estimates that there are 660,000 podcasts with millions of episodes. So of course, as part of that, there will be a huge number of arts and culture podcasts. But I would put up a bit of a health warning as well, because for every 10 arts and culture podcasts, it may be possible that only one of them has that great combination of things that everybody wants, which is great sound, nice production, and a sense that you're listening to somebody who has a more informed viewpoint than you yourself might do, so that you can learn through listening to the podcast. I think a lot of the time people sort of assume that, you know, they can just turn on their phone, get the mic going and create a podcast. And of course, in essence, they can. But what's a good podcast? A good podcast has many of the qualities that good radio and good radio shows have. Good production and a clear, cogent mentality behind it.
Do you think it's well served, Ellen?
Oh yeah, like, it's exceptional, the amount of podcasts out there from every sort of weird variety. If you're into jam, there's a podcast about jam. If you're into skydiving, there's a podcast about skydiving. So it serves lovely niches and it's very community-based. But I agree with Nadine that there's, you know, the mobile phone is the cause of such rubbish podcasts as well, because like the music industry, it's so easy now to record a song or a podcast or a piece of art that, you know, the work that goes into podcasts, really great podcasts, is kind of taken for granted. Almost like the work that's gone into this show tonight. You know, the day is spent doing the research, recording, editing, you know, discussing, where some people just think, you just record a podcast and lash it up on the internet and everything's grand. But the really great podcasts have great production and great love and great hours put into it.
Well, I'm sure people are dying to get us to get stuck into your choices. Nadine, let's start with yourself. And this year is the 40th anniversary of one of the most iconic British albums of all time, London Calling by The Clash. Mm. And I'm sure a lot of people would love to get all the background to that. And there is a podcast.
Yeah. And by way of preface, I actually came to this podcast, which is called Stay Free, The Story of The Clash, because I was a fan of another podcast, actually, which I did have a bit part in. To be honest, it was called West Cork, which came onto the Audible network and told
the
story.
It's a great podcast about Sophie Toscan-Duplantier.
Yes, so Sophie Toscan-Duplantier. Yeah. So I became very interested in the work that was done by its makers, Sam Bungie and Jennifer Ford. And I discovered that they had another podcast, a new podcast called Stay Free. So I immediately went to Spotify and looked it up. It's an 8-part series and it tells the story of The Clash from their early days in London, and starting, I think, around what, 1976. And it is narrated by Chuck D of Public Enemy, who may have one of the single best podcasting voices that you could ever have the privilege of listening to. And I wouldn't necessarily have put Chuck D as the narrator of a Clash podcast, but actually, because both bands have such a history of anti-establishment, it makes perfect sense when you listen to it.
Okay, let's listen. This is a clip, I think, from the first in the series.
In London, the final weekend of summer is all about the Notting Hill Carnival. But this was 1976, and race relations between police and the local black community had broken down in the lead up to that weekend.
You're not organizing the carnival.
The police had deployed an unprecedented number of officers, riling up the community. And on day two, the carnival exploded into a riot.
The battle went on in several streets off Ladbroke Grove. Policemen grabbing dustbin lids, trays, even fruit boxes to protect themselves.
And down below on the Portobello Road, there's swirling chaos and looting.
Portobello Road was at the center of the riot. And down one end, underneath the Westway overpass, were two young white guys, Joe and Paul, having a riot of their own.
I just remember me and Joe spending ages trying to set this car alight.
They were throwing traffic cones at police motorbikes and trying to set an overturned van on fire.
We got searched by policemen looking for bricks, like, and then later on we got searched by Rasta, looking for pound notes in my pocket, so...
No, we had those books and bottles.
3 months earlier, back in June 1976, these guys had formed a band. They called themselves The Clash.
What a voice. Chuck D of Public Enemy there narrating the story of The Clash from Stay Free, and that's available on Spotify. Alan, we'll stick with music, and this is for people who maybe want to get into the music business or are in the music business.
Yeah, this is a bit of a hidden gem, and it's produced by a great guy called Mark Graham, who's a music lecturer in Waterford and WIT. He's also a member of a band called King Kong Company. And what's brilliant about this is Mark is a really interesting interviewer. Because he comes from the business himself, he knows the real questions to ask. And I'd recommend anybody that's in the industry or wants to get into the industry listens to this, because it's a no holds barred, there's no messing, there's no fluff, he's straight into it, and that's what's great about it.
What are we going to hear here?
He talks about Spotify and how Spotify as a streaming service has changed the lengths of songs.
One of the things that you've been studying and researching is artists changing how they go about releasing music.
Yes.
And changing their actual music in order to suit Spotify. What did you find in relation to that?
This is not industry-wide, but there's a number of very, very prominent incidents of this, and in certain genres more so. Songs are getting shorter in a lot of instances. It's very common now to see a song that's only around 2 minutes or even under 2 minutes sometimes. The reason for this is because for a stream to count as a stream, a song, say, has to be streamed for 30 seconds, right? If I press play on a song, I don't have to listen to the whole thing for it to count. So if only 30 seconds of a song has to be listened to for you to get that like 0.004 of a cent or whatever it is for that one stream, it doesn't make sense to have your songs be 3 or 4 minutes long anymore. If the main way that people are listening to music is through streaming, there's just no point, because only that first 30 seconds is what's making me my money now.
So that's Mark Graham there, and the Irish Music Industry Podcast is the name of the podcast, and it's on iTunes, Spotify, all the
podcasting platforms. Yep.
Now let's cross disciplines into the world of literature. One of my own favourites is the New Yorker fiction podcast, Nadine.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. If you go for a walk and you listen to one of those amazing short stories as read by not necessarily the author of the short story, in fact not usually the author of the short story, but another great author. So if you switch on to this, you might find Margaret Atwood reading Alice Munro. You may find Dave Eggers reading Roddy Doyle. It's just gorgeous.
Yes, I love Colm Tobin reading Mary Levins in the Middle of the Fields, or Kevin Barry reading his own work. I think the clip we're going to play is Dave Eggers introducing the piece he's going to read from Roddy Doyle.
Well, the New Yorker's published 10 stories by Roddy. What is it that makes bullfighting stand out for you?
You know, I'm 42. This story is about a bunch of guys who are 48. A lot of it is about who they are now as opposed to who they once were in their 20s, and sort of that, I wouldn't say it's a tension with these guys. What's interesting is that they're all very much at peace with where they are. It bucks the trend. I don't think these guys are angst-ridden about aging. I think that they're very comfortable with it and have learned how to find joy and everyday pleasure in being older guys, moving a little slower and drinking a lot of beer.
Is there anything else that you think we should know about it before you read it? How's your Irish accent?
I don't do it. Forgive me, everybody that's listening. I didn't try an Irish accent, but Roddy's written a book about Chicago, so I feel like I'm getting him back having a Chicagoan read his book about Irishmen. So I think we're square now.
The New Yorker podcast there. It's called the New Yorker Fiction Podcast. Now, it's got its own website, and I know there's a subscription wall, so you can get quite a number of readings before you have to subscribe, but it's also available on iTunes. And sticking with language, Alan, you've selected a podcast called Something Rhymes with Purple.
Yes, and something does rhyme with purple. It's
what
the word
it?
Herple, which means if you have a limp, you walk with a limp, that's what the mean herple means. It's a wonderful podcast with Susie Dent, who fans of Countdown would know, and Giles Brandreth, whose voice you will recognise almost immediately when you hear this podcast. And it's all about words and the definitions and the meanings and the history of words. It's a brilliant listen, and it makes you a lot cleverer by the end of the podcast.
Okay, so what are we going to listen to here?
This bit's a surprise, so we'll just hit play.
In the olden days, understudies were not paid unless they actually appeared in the show. And so they wanted, obviously, to appear because then they'd get paid. And on the nights when they did break a leg, they broke through the edge of the theatre. They passed those black curtains. They broke through the leg. That was a good event for them. They'd broken a leg. Good luck. You've
Can
made
I
some money.
Can I just be the party pooper just for a second?
Okay.
I always am. But the only problem I have with that is that there are other idioms in other languages that express the same thing. And I don't know whether those curtains, for example, in a German theatre would be called Beine, B-E-I-N-E, but there is an expression in German, Hals und Beinbruch, meaning may you break your neck and your leg.
Ah.
And that came before, we think, break a leg.
So you think it's a kind of inverse joke, meaning break a leg, meaning don't break a leg. Good luck.
Yeah, well, it's strange. I don't think we actually know where Hals und Beinbruch originated either.
There now the surprise was. What does
Yeah, I didn't know which one. I got away with that. I didn't know which clip you were going to pick.
Sometimes we're, something rhymes with purple was the name of that podcast. Another language-based choice from you, Alan, is a Q&A with Jeff Goldsmith.
Yeah, what's interesting, this is a podcast all about screenwriting. And what I loved about Jeff was Jeff started this podcast way before even anyone knew what podcasting was. This was back in, I remember listening to this in 2004, 2005. And he has interviewed screenwriters for years and he's well known in the industry. So everyone that he gets interviewed by really trusts him. And when there's trust there, you open up to the interviewer. And he is just a brilliant interviewer and the guests just love him. And as a niche, if you're into your screenwriting, there's all these beautiful nuggets that you get from this podcast. It's a wonderful listen, so I highly recommend it.
And do you know what this clip is?
Yeah, this is from the writer of the amazing comic book film called Black Panther. And this clip actually just shows the trust between the two, because this guy nearly gives away a Marvel secret. And if you give away a Marvel secret, you're in big trouble.
So this is Joe Robert Cole talking to Jeff Goldsmith.
Well, so tell me this. So did you get an actual War Machine script written, or did it not go
no,
that far?
No, okay. Didn't go. It literally, I got word that I got the job, and I feel like I had a week and a half of celebrating.
Oh, okay.
And then I found out it was not happening.
Well, so riddle me this. I know that there was an Inhuman script that you wrote, I believe. is that correct?
No.
Damn it.
Not correct.
Good. Let's debunk the internet right now. What was it? What were the three scripts that you wrote during the Marvel Writers Program?
I wonder if I can say what they were.
Oh, okay. Feige just called me.
They put a chip in your... I don't wonder if I can electrocute it.
I'm not asking the plot.
They're making one. I can't say.
Okay, was one of them Black Panther? How about
no,
that?
No, no.
Really?
No,
okay,
Black Panther was not a movie. I'm sorry, I can't say.
It's totally fine. We get it.
That's great fun. A Q&A with Jeff Goldsmith. What other people does he interview?
Oh, the who's who, Quentin Tarantino, even really kind of old school screenwriters. So it's basically anyone that's ever written an Oscar-winning film or any new film. He's an amazing interviewer, and he also has the whole back catalogue. So everything from 2003, 2004, 2000, it goes on. It's very good.
Now, Nadine, Culture Gabfest, Gunfight at the OK Corral.
Yeah, I like listening to good critics talk about culture. And Culture Gabfest is a collection of Slate Magazine's critics, Stephen Metcalf, Dana Stevens and Julia Turner, amongst others, chatting about the latest cultural happenings of the week.
Right, and the one you're here now is Stephen Metcalf, Dana Stevens and Julia Turner. Mm. They discuss Netflix, The Great Hack, documentary, which is about Cambridge Analytica and their possible interference in Brexit and the US elections.
The question of whether Brexit and the election of Donald Trump actually reflect the will of the people is a huge question confronting democracy going forward. And I do think we're going to have to come up with some normative idea of what an autonomous and free individual is, that this kind of manipulation compromises them and their essence. And those are questions that at least are being raised in the context of this documentary, and they cannot be poo-pooed and made to go away by saying Obama did it too.
No, they can't. But those questions existed prior to this documentary, and this documentary very frustratingly does not advance the ball. There's just a gauziness and a fear-mongering to it that just
made me want to toss it out and go back and read the Jane Mayer stuff from last year that is much better.
That's the Culture Gab Fest Gunfight at the OK Corral. You have your own podcast, briefly, Nadine.
I do. It's called My Roots Are Showing. It's an interview-based podcast. I've got interviews up with the likes of John Ronson, recorded in New York, Kevin Barry, Tracy Thorne, and next week it's Graham Norton.
And where can we find it?
Everywhere. Spotify, iTunes, Acast, SoundCloud. Everywhere.
Alan Swan and Nadine O'Regan have been speaking to me about the best podcasts in the field of art and culture in Ireland, and a reminder that everything we broadcast on Arena is also available to podcast the following day. It's rte.ie/arena.